Hello, and welcome to the September edition of Volunteer Voices, the members-only podcast of the American Association for Museum Volunteers. I am Richard Harker, the Vice President of AAMV and the Education and Outreach Manager at the Museum of History and Holocaust Education in Kennesaw, Georgia, and I'm joined by my podcast co-host, Anna Fru, the Manager of Volunteer Services at the Awesome Museum in Washington, D.C. We're here, Anna. We made it. Welcome to Podcast Life. Volunteer Voices is one of a number of new initiatives that the board of AAMV is working on this year to provide stellar new members-only content for all of the good folk out there who join AAMV to network with others in the museum volunteer management communities and learn about and talk about best practices in our field. In these conversations, we are going to be talking to volunteer managers, interns, volunteers, AAMV board members, and all sorts of special guests. So stay tuned for coming podcasts. But if you are listening to us today, then that means you are a member of AAMV. So thank you so much for your support. You should totally check out our new website at aamv.org. And you will get access to all of our great new members-only content there. And we just, Anna and Amber and Erica from our board have been working on a new website this summer and just working super hard, and it looks really, really great. So check it out. And then the last piece of news before we jump in with today's conversation is that in the spirit of audience evaluation, and I hear everybody groaning in the background, we want to hear your feedback. So please email us at rharker@kennesaw.edu to let us know what you think of our fledgling podcast, or should I say our burgeoning podcast, what topics you want us to cover, if there are great ideas or events that you want us to plug, and if you would like to come and join us as a guest, if you have something really interesting that you want to share with the AAMV members community. So, with all of that said, let's jump in. Let's turn to today's topic. And we thought what would be a great place to start is with you, Anna. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and where you work?
So I work at the museum in Washington, D.C., which is dedicated to promoting the First Amendment and free expression. And I have been here since the day I graduated from undergrad. Like truly 24 hours later.
Wow. So you like walked off the stage straight into the museum.
I mean, I walked the stage the morning, had, you know, lunch with my parents, and when I woke up the next morning, I came to work.
That's awesome. So what's the story with the museum volunteer program? Tell us a little bit about your work and what you do and the program.
So the story of the museum volunteer program is, so the museum existed in as a smaller museum. It was a third the size in Virginia before. And they had a volunteer program at the time, and it was time between when like Museum One and then this current iteration of the museum were open, where we closed down and we only had one volunteer consistently working at that point or volunteering at the point. But we had, you know, some of the others would do some work behind the scenes at that time. When we opened up in DC, we had 25 volunteers in the program, and due to restructuring and unfortunate layoffs, in 2009, a little less than a year before our anniversary, my boss assumed direct control of the program, and that's when I got involved. So we ended up from there, recruiting and building up on the building the program to at one point to 225 volunteers, and then we have changed the role of what they do, so it's a little bit more of an intense program, meaning it's a lot more intense actually. And we now have we sort of right sized to about 100 volunteers at this point.
So, who are your typical volunteers, and what kind of things do they do at the museum?
So when I get asked this question, because I get asked this question occasionally during interviews for people who want to be volunteers, but who are our volunteers? The answer is kind of everybody, and we're really proud of that. People of various backgrounds, ages, any sort of way we try, we think we're really big about trying to increase our diversity. So sort of everybody. And we're sort of known for having like a news, you know, because freedom of the press is part of the First Amendment. And so, you know, a lot of people come because they want to be a news junkie, because they're news junkies, and sort of anybody can be a news junkie. So we have a very diverse group. Most of them are guides. We don't use the docent term. And we've been exclusively recruiting for guides for almost 3 years now, which is why the program has gotten more intense. We switched from recruiting for visitor services volunteers to exclusively guides.
Why did you make that decision?
That was based on visitor services made that call. They said that they really wanted to increase tours, and that's where they really wanted the extra help. So when they, that's what they said, that's what we restructured the program for.
Neat.
We still do have people that volunteer as visitor services volunteers, but those are people that are grandfathered in.
So that they're a carryover.
Yes, I mean, there are people that volunteer with the information desk and other behind the scenes and also behind the scenes departments, but those are, we don't actively recruit for those positions. Those sort of like pop up occasionally.
Nice. So how many, I was just thinking, how many people work with you in volunteer management?
So work with me, I mean, clearly my boss, and she oversees a number of departments, including the training department. We're unusual that we actually have a whole department, two full-time people that they train, and part of what they do is they conduct the guide training. We're very fortunate to have that resource. We have a full-time scheduler who works with the volunteer schedules and also works with private tours because our volunteers do those. And then we have a part-time person that helps with the admin work that's associated with the volunteer program, which, as you probably know, is a lot.
Yeah.
And there's also a coordinator in the department that helps us out. She also helps out training and stuff as well, and facilities. So those are kind of the major key players. But
okay. So we asked you today to sort of talk about something that you're really interested in and one of your big initiatives, which is using social media with your volunteer program and especially recruitment. So why don't you just jump in and sort of tell us about all of that, how you got started, and just sort of give us really the nitty-gritty of how that works for you all.
So it mostly started, there was a big push in November of last year. And the big push became because we are recruiting for a more intense program. The guides are doing 40 hours of in-classroom training, as well as 30 hours estimated outside of the classroom to become guides. And so when you're recruiting for a more intense role, it's it can be harder to recruit. And so we needed to come up with something to help with that, and our recruiting budget unfortunately hadn't increased, so we needed to come up with something that wasn't too expensive but would be effective, and kind of get the word out that we were looking for more guides. So I met with our marketing department, and they were super enthusiastic about it, which is wonderful, and that's kind of where it started. It's just like, well, this is an arena we kind of haven't tapped into too much. We've been doing a lot of like volunteer ads or flyers to schools or word of mouth, but this was a way to sort of try a new avenue, see how it went. And so that's kind of where it started.
Okay. And what platforms do you use, and why do you use them, and how successful have they been? What have been your different experiences?
So we mostly use Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, because those were the main ones for our organization. We have recently been added to Snapchat, but we haven't used that as a volunteer recruitment tool yet. But we use them just because those were the ones that were most used by the company. And so it just kind of made sense. They had the biggest audiences. And so those were the ones. And they seem to work all right thus far. One of the initiatives we tried to do with our social media campaign was to have an open house, which is the first time we had done that. Well, that we had those were here. I know it had been done before I got here, when we first opened in 2008, but this is the first time I had been involved with it. And so that was purely advertised on social media.
And how did that work out?
It worked out really well. It was funny, because we put it up on like Friday evening, which is not the most like, you know,
right. I get you. I get you.
But our marketing department was really wonderful, and they had decided to just make it a sponsored post, which I didn't know they were going to do, and that was really exciting. And so I was like, okay, Friday evening, if it rolls out, you know, it's fine. It might be a slower time, but that's totally fine. And by Monday morning, first thing, I had a phone call from the director of marketing asking me what the cutoff was, because we had 115 people RSVP yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a little bit of a panic, because we were like, we had really thought, because my goal, honestly, was like 25, 30 people.
Sure.
That's so, when you go from like somehow on a Friday evening to Monday morning to 115, because we're at that point thinking like, okay, what's our capacity for training? Should all these people work out? Knowing that, you know, of course, not everybody is going to then show up to the event, realize it works for them, apply, be accepted by us for the program, you know, come do the background check, be accepted, and then go through. Like, there's clearly like a selection process, whether it's self-selection or us, and we just knew not everybody would, but that was a much bigger the number than we had anticipated. So we had to put a cutoff, and we came up with one, and I think about 50 people came though. So that was part of the things that we learned, was that, because normally they say for events, you know, you should anticipate maybe half the people not coming. For this, it was 2/3.
That's great.
So 2/3 of the people not coming, okay. But 50 people, hey, that exceeded my original expectation. So I was still okay with it.
Absolutely. So, and then out of those 50 people, how many of them have now become kind of regular volunteers for you?
Most, or a good portion of them. Part of it is, it's hard to put a number on it, because some people who are now volunteering were some of the call-offs for that. They were like, oh my gosh, something just came up. I still want to volunteer. Can I? And so those people have followed up. So we've gotten a good number. In fact, we actually got another guys, so we call them sessions. We do 3 sessions a year for guide training, and we had another session come out of that. So we actually had a midsummer session, which had not initially been planned. So we had another like group of people that are currently becoming volunteers. So that's great.
That's amazing. So what's what other techniques have you used with social media to sort of really reach out to volunteers?
One of the things we did, and I think they're currently not available online. They've had an issue with it, with the link, but that's getting worked out. But we did this for a while, and we started in November, was we did volunteer profiles. So I talked to certain volunteers that I thought might be good and be representative of the program. And so they were interviewed by marketing. And they wrote a profile of them. And so those got tweeted out so people could learn about who our volunteers are. And we purposely try to also just choose, you know, people who were in different days or had just different life experiences, so that people could kind of, you know, almost like see themselves as a volunteer. And I actually had somebody once tell me that one of the reasons they decided they could volunteer here was because they saw that there was another high school student who volunteered.
Oh, so it kind of opened the door to them. It sort of showed them that it was okay for them to want to volunteer.
Right, because sometimes it's funny when, you know, people are like, am I going to be the only high school student who volunteers? Am I going to be the only person who is retired who volunteers? And the answer is no, you will not be the only one who's in high school and not the only one who's retired. So I think for her being a high school student, it was, she saw that there were other high school students that volunteered. So I think that kind of answered that question that she had had.
No, neat. So what else have you done? Are there other things that you've tried or that haven't been as successful, or things that you just wish you could do but you just haven't had time to get to yet?
We tried Instagram and that worked fine. It had a link to one of the profiles, so I know that's the kind of thing that happens on like Twitter and Instagram is like we send links to either about the program so that's like, hey, we're recruiting for classes, or hey, learn about this volunteer, which are great. But those are the main ones. And then of course the open house itself. That was a That was a big initiative, but those were sort of the ways that we're currently using it.
And what do you think the biggest thing you've learned throughout the process is?
To kind of manage expectations, because it was unknown to us. We didn't know what advertising, we didn't know advertising an open house would be like. We didn't know how many people would be interested or engaging. Our social media who would be interested in volunteering. We didn't know, in general. So I guess it was sort of like managing expectations, like, okay, so 150 people RSVP'd for this thing, but not 150 people are coming. But, now we have an idea. Okay, a third of the people who RSVP will probably come. But it also helped us in general, just because we definitely saw just an overall increase in awareness about the program. When we started in November, we saw an immediate like 175% increase in application submissions, which was great. But we also saw people that, and it wasn't necessarily people that found us through social media, it's just like putting things out on social media sort of just make it more aware, it's like in the ether. And so then they hear about it from friends, and then people who didn't necessarily see your tweet all of a sudden know more about, just know of it, and then they apply. So I guess that was the biggest thing that we learned, was just sort of manage expectations, but know that even if you only got like 10 likes on your Instagram photo, that actually might result in somebody mentioning that there's a volunteer program here to someone who would be interested.
Okay, so then sort of, okay, quick fire question. If you had to sort of list some pros and cons of using social media for your volunteer program and especially in recruitment, what would you say are sort of some of the immediate pros and cons that you have come out of your experience?
Okay, definitely a pro. Number one, it does increase your overall awareness, like people's overall awareness about the fact that there is a volunteer program and that they are looking for people. Because we definitely saw that, like even outside people who didn't list that they found us through social media, we just saw such an increase in application submissions, which is great. It did work. We did get an extra class of volunteers that we weren't anticipating, so it does work. And it's not that expensive. I mean, it does take staff time to take photos of the volunteers, so for Instagram and articles and things, it takes time to, staff time to sort of interview people and write, profiles like we did. And they did spend money promoting it, which you didn't have to do, and they did, which was very nice. So it's not free necessarily, but it also doesn't have to be very expensive. So it can be an inexpensive but effective way to volunteer, recruit. So that for us was, I'd say those are the pros. In terms of cons, you know, not everybody who is interested online in volunteering will actually follow through and volunteer. And it seems to be like, because we had done like volunteer fairs before and had a higher sort of retention rate from people who like applied, because more people than that we talked to then applied versus just online. But that's now something that we know, but it wasn't as successful in terms of just sheer number of people who, in terms, I guess the proportion of people who said they were interested and then applied was not as high as maybe like a volunteer affair. It's constantly something that you have to be on top of. So if you tweet, somebody may see it, but then it might get lost in their Twitter feed because there's so much competition on various social media platforms. So it's something that has, you know, it was tweeted several days in a row, or it was on Facebook several days in a row. So that's kind of the, it takes manpower. It's not like a volunteer match ad where you just put it up and it's there and it exists. It's something where it has to constantly kind of been take, it has to be taken care of and like maintained. And then I guess there's only so much information you can share. Like people like love the idea of volunteering at a museum, but just you can't necessarily explain in 140 characters. In fact, you can't explain in 140 characters that it's an intense program and that we're looking for people that can make that commitment of at least 40 hours in the classroom and every other week, or every other weekend or every week shift, that kind of thing. There's only so much you can fit in a tweet. So it may sound nice, but it may not be something that they can actually do. So that's part of it.
Awesome. And then this is my final question, I promise. And we're going to try to remember to ask this to every guest on the podcast, which is, what is your favorite volunteer story?
I think it's a good question. The one that strikes me is it's about the volunteers, but it was not a conversation with a volunteer. So every year we do a lunch appreciation for our volunteers as a way to say, you know, as part of our recognition program, just, you know, thank you so much for all you do. And so it's only the volunteers for the most part. This year our CEO went as well, and, you know, the VP of our department will go, and then my boss, of course, will go. And it's really nice. And this year I took my boyfriend as my guest, and he had never met the volunteers before. And I remember he turned to me at one point. He was like, "This is a family." And I said, "Well, yeah." And he was like, "But it's a family." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" He was like, you know these people, you know them personally, they know you. He goes, "They know each other." And he was like, "It feels like I'm at a somebody's family reunion." And it was just, he was like, it's, he hadn't thought about it that way. And I guess to see somebody else's perspective on the program was really interesting. I don't know. I just thought it was very sweet. He was just like, it's like a family. Like, you can tell how much everybody cares about the museum, but they also really care about each other. And I think that's true. And so I thought that was, it made me think of it sort of like seeing it from a different perspective. Because, you know, of course, like I see, you know, this person and I know them and I see them every week and we talk. And so I know about them and they know about me. And of course, they know about the people they volunteer with. But just to have that perspective that, like, you know what, when they volunteer, it's not just that they come and they interact with visitors, which of course they do, and they do a great job doing, but it's also about their interactions with staff and with each other that make their experience.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Anna. And if folk wanted to contact you directly, if there was something that you said that particularly they had a question about or they wanted to follow up on, how could they do that?
They could email me. My email is, and I apologize, my last name is not common. It's AFRUEH@museum.org.
Perfect. And we want to thank you for joining us for our inaugural Volunteer Voices podcast. We also especially want to thank all of the board of AAMV for their incredible hard work, especially as they are volunteers to the board, and for indulging our podcast Flight of Fancy. And we want to thank you for listening. You can find loads more members-only content at aamv.org, and we welcome your feedback through our website or by emailing either me or Anna directly. And my email is rharker@kennesaw.edu. So until next time, thank you so much.